This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Rob Dietz. Rob is editor of The Daily News, an online publication named in honor of the visionary economist Herman Daly. Rob is also the former executive director of CASE, the Center for the Advancement of the Steady State Economy. Rob Dietz is here today to tell us about his book, Enough is Enough, Building a Sustainable Economy in a World of Finite Resources, published in 2013 and co-authored with Dan O'Neill. Welcome, Rob.
Thanks, Diane. It's great to be here.
What led you to write your book, Enough is Enough? What is your goal?
Well, you know, I was really frustrated with what was happening environmentally and socially in the world. You know, things like facing climate change, staring down all the poverty and unemployment issues. And we, Dan and I, saw that there was an opportunity to look at how we could restructure the economy so that it could meet people's needs without undermining the life support systems of the planet. And we've been working on this issue for a bunch of years and felt like it was time to put it all down in a way that people could understand and that they could see themselves being a part of it.
Your book's title is Enough is Enough. What do you mean by enough?
Well, you know, our economy is always striving for more. Economic growth has become the overarching principle on which we structure our economy. And we do that without even looking at whether it's worth it. And if you start looking at it, you can see that our growth now is costing us more than it's worth. So the idea is that instead of always going after more jobs, more income, more stuff, more consumption, that we make a transition to enough jobs, enough income, and enough stuff. And it'll put us in better balance with the capacities that the planet has to offer.
In your book, you argue that the kind of economy that provides enough is a steady-state economy. What is a steady-state economy?
Well, at its simplest, a steady-state economy is about keeping our consumption of material and energy within ecological capacity. And in practice, what that means is that we have a fairly stable number of people consuming a fairly stable amount of goods and services. And it, again, is about stopping at the point of enough. You know, when we all have enough to meet our needs and live a high quality of life, chasing after more is actually causing us problems.
Would you elaborate on the problems with continuous growth?
Yeah, you can boil them down to two categories. First would be the environmental side. And, you know, anybody who's studying what's happening in the atmosphere, in our ecosystems, with our natural resources, can see that we're facing a lot of just profound problems. And these are the consequences of growing the economy too large. You know, for example, we've got 394 parts per million or so of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, leading to global climate change. We've entered the sixth mass extinction spasm on the planet, and it's because we're growing the economy too large for habitats to be able to provide for other species. So we can see these environmental problems. They're documented everywhere. The other side, though, is also equally important, is socially. We've got 2.7 billion people on the planet who are trying to scrape by on less than $2 a day. So we're seeing that there's not enough to go around because we've grown past the optimal size of the economy. So we've got to get back to an understanding that the economy can be founded on the principle of enough rather than always going after more.
What forces drive economic growth?
Well, Dan and I talk about what we call the growth imperative, and it's these pieces that are built into the economy that require growth. And one of them is based on the way our job markets are set up. When the economy stops growing, a lot of people are thrown out of work. So that's probably the biggest one, that the way it's set up right now, we need growth for job creation. But it doesn't have to be that way. Another is the way our money works. Because of the way banks loan money into existence, and the fact that we've got to pay interest on those loans requires an ever-increasing amount of debt, and that makes another piece of the growth imperative. And the fact that businesses are largely beholden to the profit motive, that they've got to keep growing their enterprises and show the potential for growth in revenue to increase stock prices, that's another piece of the growth imperative. So the issue is, how do we change the economy so that we can knock out that growth imperative and still make sure people have jobs and meaningful work, and that our money does what we want it to and businesses can thrive?
Well, you've been alluding to this a bit, but what is the goal of a steady state economy?
You can boil it down to really two things. One is that it's got to be sustainable. It has to fit within the ecological capacity of the planet. But the other really important one is it's got to provide a high quality of life. So we're really trying to combine those two aspects, that we meet our needs and we live long and happy lives, and that it can keep on going well into the future.
What are the key strategies to create a steady state economy of enough?
There's a lot of different policies and ways that you can change things, so I'll just touch on a few of them. One of the very first things that we need to do is we need to start measuring what really matters. We've been following gross domestic product, or GDP, as a measure of economic progress, and that's just not going to cut it. The critiques of GDP have a long history, and basically what's happening is we are looking at a statistic of money changing hands and thinking that that's the same thing as progress. It's not. So we need to be measuring whether our economy is able to produce a high quality of life and whether it can be sustained. And there are a lot of really good measures out there to do that. So that's the first thing we need to do. But then, as I said earlier, jobs are a really important issue. And we've got to figure out, okay, in a non-growing economy, how can we make sure that people have access to jobs? And one of the main ways to do that is to make the workplace more flexible, to share the work and reduce work time. And, you know, you can see a lot of people out there who would gladly trade in some of their income for more time. And then those who are having difficulties finding employment would have more opportunities to do so. So there's really some win-win situations in jobs. And, you know, once you start doing things like this, changing the measures we use in the economy, changing the job market, other changes start to cascade. You know, we start to see that businesses can change the way that they operate, and that politicians can actually begin to talk about the fact that we can't have infinite growth on a finite planet.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Rob Dietz, co-author with Dan O'Neill of the book Enough is Enough, Building a Sustainable Economy in a World of Finite Resources. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. In your book, you also mention an equitable distribution of income being important to a steady state economy. Would you explain?
Yeah, I would be happy to. A lot of the basis in our book comes from the work of Kate Pickett and Richard Wilkinson, and they've studied equality in societies and found that if you can reduce the gap between the rich and the poor, everyone in society becomes better off. Healthier, happier, less violence, less crime, all these markers of social health improve when that gap in income is reduced. And in a steady state economy, this is especially important because we're saying that we need to limit the amount of materials and resources and energy resources flowing through an economy. And so we've got to think about how all of that ends up being distributed, and it's got to be fair. And one way to achieve that fairness is to limit the gap. You know, I get amazed. You know, one of the stats that we included in the book was the inequality that exists in America with the six people who inherited the Walmart fortune. They control as much wealth as the 90 million Americans at the bottom of the income charts. So six people with the same resources as 90 million. It's something that we need to change, and it would be better not just for the 90 million, but also for those six. The health benefits accrue to all parts of society.
What are some steps that can be taken to bring about a more equitable distribution of income or resources in the context of a steady state economy?
Well, we've got two examples of how it can be done. One of them would be the Sweden or Vermont example, and the other would be the Japan or New Hampshire model. And in Sweden and Vermont, they do a lot of social programs and taxation strategies. And that's one way, but I think a better way is the Japan and New Hampshire method, which is to have more equitable income, more equitable salary from the start. I've seen stats that say CEOs now make 500 times the amount of money that the average worker in their firms makes. And that's much less the case in Japan than it is in the U.S. And so if we can democratize workplaces, have more employee-owned companies where employees are making more decisions about compensation, we can achieve a more equitable range of salaries from the start. And I think that's a better long-term solution. And I'd like to add that this can change really quickly. The U.S. used to be very equitable after World War II in its distribution of income, and Japan was the most unequal country, and they've completely changed places.
What do you say to those who claim that growth is needed to bring the poor out of poverty, especially in the developing world?
Well, I say that the planet can only take so much economic growth, and it's time for the nations that have prospered and benefited the most from growth to make the transition to a steady state economy, to take that entrepreneurial step, be innovative enough to get that economy of enough, and hopefully leave some ecological space for nations that haven't benefited from growth to have some of that. I like to think of them as the high consuming nations and the low consuming nations. I mean, if you're living in a nation where you're not able to consume enough to meet your needs, that's going to have to change. But their development path certainly should take a different route from what we've done in the U.S. and the rest of the Western economies. You know, it may involve some growth, but it would be with the ultimate goal of achieving a prosperous, steady state.
What new institutions would be needed in a steady state economy?
Well, one of the institutions that we talk about changing in Enough is Enough is the monetary system. You know, we've got this system where private banks create money out of thin air and loan it into existence. You know, most people think that the government is printing money and that's where it comes from. Well, that's a very, very small percentage of it. In England, 97% of the money that's being used in the economy comes when a bank makes a loan. And the bank doesn't have that money in its vaults. It just creates it, as I said, out of thin air. So all of the profits from doing that are going to private banks when money is supposed to be a public utility. So one of the very first institutional changes we would recommend for the monetary system is that we return the control of this public system to the public, that banks would no longer be able to issue money the way that they do now, and that we would control it through, you know, in the U.S., either the Federal Reserve or the Treasury. And we would also look at augmenting national currency with a lot more local currencies and stepping up the ability to have local currencies supporting thriving local economies.
What business models are most compatible with a steady state economy?
Well, there's a lot of change that needs to happen. You know, right now we've got what some would call a corporatocracy. And the giant multinational corporations, it's not a model that's working for us. That's part of how we got into this mess that we're in right now, both environmentally and socially. So changing that, you know, I already mentioned employee-owned companies, but we can go beyond that. Cooperatives are really taking off, and they have been shown to have much less of a growth imperative, mostly because the co-op owners have other goals in mind besides just how big of an enterprise can we make here. So co-ops are a real big one, and there's all kinds of new business models that are being developed. One of them that I want to mention is the Benefit Corporation, or B Corp, which our publisher of Enough is Enough, is a great company called Barrett Kohler. They're actually a benefit corporation, and the idea is their corporate charter includes social and environmental goals beyond just profit-seeking behavior that you see from the big corporations today.
What can be done to help promote these new or alternative business models?
I think one of the things that we've got to do is get much greater awareness that these are out there. A lot of people, they don't know about them. The idea of alternate business models, in fact, the idea that infinite growth is a poor strategy for running the economy, these ideas are known in relatively narrow circles. So the very first thing we've got to do is get widespread awareness that our planet is finite and that we've got to have an economy that recognizes that, and that our economy needs to be made up of businesses and institutions that are functioning accordingly.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Rob Dietz, co-author with Dan O'Neill of the book Enough is Enough, Building a Sustainable Economy in a World of Finite Resources. To what extent would transition to a steady-state economy be disruptive?
Well, you know, I can't say that it would happen without pain. You know, I think any time you've got one model for running society and you change that, there's going to be some difficulties. But we've done it before. One thing that amazes me is what used to be considered normal, we wouldn't even conceive of today as a way to operate. You know, civil rights, to me, is a really good example. There's what we used to do is so objectionable that no one would even think about running society that way anymore. So we can have hope that a transition can happen without causing the average family too much pain. But I will say this, I mean, the changes that we're talking about, they're big changes. To be honest, they're going to be disruptive. So I think it's probably going to take a crisis or series of crises to get us moving away from this constant pursuit of more and getting to this acceptance of enough as a better way to run the economy.
What do you see as the biggest issues in terms of disruption?
Well, you know, I think there are several of them. One is culturally. You know, we've gotten stuck in this materialistic, consumerist mindset in the U.S. You know, the stats on advertising exposure to ads are crazy. We've developed a society that holds consumerism up as a big value, and I think that's got to change. And anytime we ask people to change what they're doing in their daily lives, or we start rethinking the way that we structure day-to-day living, that's a big change. But the good news is that once we let go of the consumerist mentality, life presents all these other great opportunities. You know, you can pick up a guitar, you can learn a language, spend more time with family and friends. Nobody ever laments at the end of their life that, oh, I wish I had bought more stuff. You know, I wish I had spent more time doing the things that I really wanted to do. And so it's a big change, but I think it's one that's positive and exciting.
What can be done to make the public more aware of the benefits of a steady-state economy?
Well, one thing we've got to do is break the silence among our media and our politicians. I think, Diane, your show would be an exception in transmitting the idea, but when you go back, say, to the election and listen to debates between President Obama and Mitt Romney, they were competing with each other to promise who could grow the economy the fastest. And most people, you know, with common sense can see that you can't have infinite economic growth on a finite planet. But we can have a wonderful economy that we continue to develop that meets our needs and that also takes care of the planet, but they don't talk about that. And it's largely, I think, related to the jobs issue. And so what we need to do is show that there is a viable alternative, that we do have sound policies. You know, that's a lot of what our book is about, are these ideas for creating this economy. And once people see that, we can pressure our politicians to begin leveling with the public, and the media can pick it up too as the bigger story that it ought to be.
What is most preventing us from moving toward a steady state economy?
Well, I think it's the way we're addictively pursuing growth. In the past, growth has provided many benefits. You know, making the economy bigger in some ways was akin to making life better. But like anything, there are diminishing returns to that growth. We can understand that in our own lives. If I order a pizza and I eat a slice, it's great. I eat a second one, well, it's good, not quite as good as the first. I eat a third, fourth. If I eat a tenth slice, now it's actually causing more harm than good. And that's what's happened with growth. We've grown the economy past its optimal size. But we're used to it now. That's the way we've been living our lives. So I think the biggest challenge is letting go of that, really observing what's happening and understanding that growth is not our path moving forward. And that's a real big challenge, and I don't take that lightly at all.
What trends do you see that suggest we are moving or can move to a steady state economy? What is currently happening that you find most hopeful?
I think the one thing that is the most heartening to me is when I speak with college-age young people, they are starting to, I feel like they're having an awakening. They're seeing that the models that we've built for an economy aren't necessarily going to work for them. They may not even exist for them. And so they are looking to remake what it means for them to have a job or what it means to participate in the economy. And they're really excited about it. So I think that's the most heartening. But you can also see all kinds of movements going on. The movement to amend the Constitution, to revoke corporate personhood is an example. The transition towns movement, you know, to take towns and cities and get them ready for a transition off of fossil fuels. That's another great one. There are many, many pockets like that. I live in an intentional community, a co-housing community that has sustainability values as a founding element. So, you know, all these kinds of things are happening that are really exciting and moving us in the direction of an economy that does accept enough as its operating principle.
How would you compare the U.S. to, say, Europe in terms of moving toward a steady-state economy?
Well, I think Europe is probably a little further down the road than the U.S. in that they can at least seem to talk about it, even among some politicians. But neither is really there yet. Neither is aiming for policies that would stabilize the throughput of resources and energy. But you do see more progress there. You know, Germany, for example, has taken a very close look at its energy systems and has chosen to work toward a renewable energy economy, which would be the basis of a steady state. And, you know, the U.S. is lagging behind on initiatives like that.
Would you also say more about how the path toward a steady state economy would be different in the industrialized compared to the developing world?
Again, I think in the high-consuming nations, we've got to take a leadership role, really help lead the way, turn toward our innovative side to say, okay, we've got to rework our economy. And what that will mean in a lot of the high-consuming nations is a period of what's called degrowth. And the idea, so right now we are consuming resources on the planet 50% faster than they can be regenerated in nature. So we can't keep doing that. And countries like the U.S. and Australia and some of the Western European nations, we're consuming the most resources per person. And so we'll see this period of degrowth where we decreasing the materials and energy flowing through our economies. And the pathway for some nations where they are not consuming enough to meet their needs is to may need to actually increase their consumption. But the idea is that all nations of the world would equitably move towards a sustainably sized steady state.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I'd like to say that a steady state economy, an economy that accepts enough, is one that can work for all of us. It's one where we can have jobs, we can meet our needs, we can live a good life, and at the same time, we can take care of the resources that we were given. We can take care of this one blue-green planet that we all share. And so I don't think there's anything more important than making this transition for our families, for our security, and for our long-term health.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Rob.
Yeah, thank you, Diane. I really appreciate it, and thanks to all your listeners.
You are just listening to Rob Dietz, co-author with Dan O'Neill of the book Enough is Enough, Building a Sustainable Economy in a World of Finite Resources, published in 2013 by Barrett Kohler Publishers. For more information, check on the web at steadystate.org. Again, that's steadystate.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.